We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hey, everybody, before we get started today, I am on holiday. As you know, I watched the game in an unbelievably unique location. It was a really good vibe and atmosphere, and I enjoyed the game thoroughly. Unfortunately, I won't be able to give you my thoughts today because of the whole going on my holiday at the worst possible time imaginable, but Tim and Clive will take you the rest of the way today, and I can't wait to get back and have a say and look forward to a second leg where I think we are still very much alive. I just wanted to say we just got another £25,000 matching pledge for our fundraiser. Spare a thought for the children in the Zaatari refugee camp last night, who are some of the biggest Arsenal fans in the world and probably had no ability to watch the game except to find out the result, and will certainly be hanging on every update they get over the coming weeks. So if you could give, we would appreciate it. If you can, I totally understand. But if you can go to our Just Giving page, justgiving.com/page/ABP and give, we will be doing the drawing shortly after I get back for a VIP ticket to the Bournemouth game in a box, participating in the breakdown live, meeting the podcasters and all that. So we're so close to getting to our goal, a £25,000 matching bid from an unbelievably generous donor. So everything you give right now is actually tripled for the next £25,000. So if you can, please give. Otherwise, love you. I'll turn it over to the podcast now. You'll hear the music. You'll hear Tim and Clive, and I'm sure they have brilliant things to say about the match.
Hello and welcome to the Arsenal Vision post-match podcast with me, your host, Tim Stillman, on this occasion. Elliot is on holiday, vacation, whichever word you use, wherever you're from, he would say vacation. And the only part of the podcast that he wants anything to do with is the ad read, the part where he really shines and the part that he really lives for. So it is me, Tim, hosting on this occasion to talk about Tuesday night's 2-2 draw with Bayern Munich at Emirates Stadium in the Champions League quarterfinal. Doesn't that whole sentence, maybe the 2-2 bit, but the rest of that sentence sounds really, really great, doesn't it? And to talk about this game and perhaps a little bit the occasion as well, because it was an occasion for us, with me is the Clivester, the Clive Mind, Clive Palmer, who you can follow on Twitter at ClivePAFC. Good afternoon, Clive.
Hello, hello. And how are you this fine day after the night before? How are you feeling?
Yeah, okay. You know, got home quite late from the games. The 8 o'clock kickoffs, I don't know why they feel so much worse than a 7:45 or a 7:30. But yeah, it's we'll go into this. But I think this is a really interesting, but in a way quite strange game to pass. I think there's a number of different ways you can look at it, and yeah. I think it's our job to look at it all of those ways, actually. But before we go into the game, and we were just saying off mic, I think this is quite an easy podcast to do. I don't even have any notes because I felt this game had such an ebb and flow that we're just really going to go through the whole thing chronologically. But before we talk about the game, Clive, this was the first time Arsenal have been in the Champions League quarterfinal since 2010. I dug out a picture of myself from the Nou Camp on a particular night that didn't go our way, really, thanks to Mr. Lionel Messi. But you know, 14 years and about 3 stone ago. this was the first time that, you know, I think it's widely accepted that once you get to the last 8 of the Champions League, like, all of the teams are elite at this stage.
Yeah.
And it's been a long time since we were in that company. So perhaps before we go into the game, talk about, I think there's something about Champions League games as well, like on a weekday evening when most people are at work all day, not getting very much done, fidgeting, looking at their phones, doing the old, you know, the corner flagging at 5 to 5, ready to get their coats on and get out. How did you experience the build up to this game? Because it's been too long since Arsenal have been in a Champions League quarterfinal.
Yeah, I try and stay cool and try to not be outwardly nervous. And I thought I was doing a great job, but I recognised during the day that I was snapping at the wife, I was snapping at my son. I was just like on edge. And I thought, I wanted to get out of it. I just wanted to go. And then
you get to the pub at 4 p.m, Clive.
Exactly. I saw a picture of you and it said, like, Tim's out. I'm thinking, I knew I should have gone there early. I just, like, devastated. I should have left at like 12. And there's a nice feeling to these nights, and you just feel as though you feel like it's a rush to get in there. It's a rush to get into the ground. It just feels really exciting. And where I am, it just seemed like there's so many more people in the ground. And, you know, before kickoff, the singing was just unbelievable, Tim. You know, when the teams came out, and you just felt it crackling around. And it's so exciting to see everybody in the same place emotionally for these games. I'm really excited, maybe overly excited, and maybe that transmitted to the pitch, shall we say? Save that for later. Everyone was overly excited about what we could achieve because, you know, I always say every game has its context, and the context of this game was people are waking up to how good Arsenal are in the Premier League. Suddenly we're top. All the numbers say we're good. So we've had a good couple of days receiving all the flowers. Our centre-backs are the world, you know, the league's best. And Bayern Munich are on the floor getting beaten by a promotion team. And so, well, you know, we talk about 5-1. Is this a chance to get them back, you know? and I think the context, you know, lots of games were won or lost before kickoff, in my opinion. And the context for leading up to this game was like, made Bayern Munich say, yeah, you think you've arrived? And I don't know about you, Tim, but the first minute they kick the ball long, it goes through, and then they go into a 4-4-2. And I looked across the pitch, and I looked at the names. I looked at their bodies, I looked at their physicality, I looked at their tight marking, and I thought, uh-oh, we did not touch the ball yet. I thought, we're in a game. You know, all the things that we have over teams, the aura we have over teams, the league at the moment, no. This is Bayern Munich. We're in a game for minute one.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was thinking earlier as well, I listened to Lewis Ambrose and Andrew's kind of preview podcast on Arsblog Patreon, and Lewis was kind of pointing out that actually Bayern Munich's season was okay until about February, and yeah. Leverkusen have just done this amazing thing where they haven't lost a game in any competition. And Lewis was talking about how they were 2 points behind Leverkusen when they went there in February, but they got beat. And after that, they've basically thrown the towel in, the manager's gone and blah, 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 etc. But I'm with you. I was looking at the names and I was thinking about this earlier. Like, if I asked you to name me a definitively better front three in Europe than Bayern Munich, so I'm not sure I could do it. I think there's some debate, but I'm not sure. And it made me reflect on things like, you know, Real Madrid no longer have Ronaldo, Benzema, Bale. You know, the Messi, Neymar, Suarez is no longer. Mane, Firmino, Salah is no longer. Like, some big dynasty front threes have split up in the last few years. And it made me think, like, who definitely has a better front three than Bayern? And I think Billy Carpenter as well wrote a match preview about this. He was talking about Bayern's attacking numbers, yeah, saying they're the best in Europe. And I think that you could see that. And I guess since you referenced it there, why don't we kind of talk about the 1,000-foot view of the game before we go into the incidents, as it were, that kind of shaped the game? Because coming away with the emotion of it, Clive, I was very attracted to the narrative-driven kind of conclusion from this game. And yeah, just narrative has become a dirty word, but that doesn't mean it's incorrect. But my feeling coming away from this was we're still a little bit immature, still perhaps got a little bit excited at 1-0 and, you know, thought we could win the game in 25 minutes. But to be fair, if Ben White puts that chance away and it's 2-0, no one's talking about us getting too excited. Everyone's talking about us, you know, kind of going for the jugular and getting it. And so I don't know whether that's just a convenient narrative my brain has formed about the respective maturity of the two teams in this competition. And I think Paul in the last podcast was kind of spot on about how European games are just different. Or was this just two really good teams where control of the game swapped backwards and forwards a little bit because they're both really good teams? And this was just a 2-2 draw between two of the best teams in Europe. Where do you fall on this kind of 15, 18 hours later?
Yeah, I always believe in you walk into a game through a certain window. That window is normally the pre-game narrative and hype, right? And I almost tried to disconnect from that yesterday, because then if you disconnect from that, you can see what actually happened. And so I think we had too many flowers before the game, as I sort of alluded to earlier. And because of that, you don't expect certain things. And then when you don't expect certain things, you over-index the outcome and the event. You know, when you start seeing people running around in different directions and thinking, well, what's he doing over there? What's he doing over there? Why has he lost that tackle? Hold on, they're quite good. They're 6 feet as well. They've got muscles. They can run. They've got pace. Not going to win every race. Not going to win every challenge. We've grown accustomed to that, and that's given us our control and strangulation of games. So when, in the first few minutes, they just hook a ball out from the left side, goes into Kane on the angle, he lays it off, and they're spinning the ball out in behind our fullbacks. Everyone's saying, oh, our fullbacks, what's going on there? Hold on. What's the event beforehand that's led to that? Good exits. Even though he pressed Eric Dier onto his left foot, we still got out. Tim, how many times in the first half on your side did you see them get out on that touchline? I mean, right by Martinelli. I'm talking like 2 feet of space. They found it. They got out. Teams are not doing that to us. That's their quality. Kimmich's quality in possession. How many times did they go right into Kimmich and into De Ligt? They wanted to go that side so desperately so they can get out with good quality on that side. Mate, this is what it's all about. We had to adjust. We had to adjust. Some of those adjustments were efficient. Some were inefficient. I do think it's very difficult to say. I did an IR at halftime. I don't know if you call it yet, Tim. But I used the words. My lock, stock, two smoking barrels words. I sort of said, well, everybody calm down and stop getting shot. Because I could see my Twitter feed going crazy, digging people out. I could see the team going crazy. Hold on, you're throwing this away. Me and Elliot stood in port, and I kept saying to Elliot, you know, Elliot's like, it's very difficult to stand and get him to calm down. I said, mate, this is a 180-minute tie. What? Calm. Stay calm. You know, this is a two-legged tie. But we were so keen to impress. And Tim, I'm telling you, mate, did we underestimate them? Did we underestimate their quality? I'm asking the question to you, but to everybody. Did you underestimate them in your mind? And did that make you, as you were adjusting to their quality, did that make you overly nervous and maybe not see the game as clearly as you would have done if everything went to plan, shall we say? Makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely think that. And, you know, you made the point about us getting our flowers and everything before this game. I didn't really buy that, I don't think. And it's kind of similar to Porto, right? When did we get Porto? In the middle of slapping loads of teams 5-6-0.
Yeah.
And we're talking about maybe we can beat Porto in the first leg, rest some players for the second leg, and like, no, you can't. And sometimes it reminds me actually of when you play like obviously Bayern Munich are a really big team, but you know when you play like Barcelona, when we played Barcelona a couple of times in the Champions League,
yeah,
like peak Barca, and you know all about their quality and everything like that, but until you're in it and you feel it, you're like, okay, this isn't like watching it.
Remember that first Barca game, Tim? We couldn't even put three passes together. Do you remember that one? The first time that we were passing Arsenal. We couldn't put three passes together. It was taken from us. And it was like another world. Do you know what I mean? Remember that feeling at halftime? We were like gasping. It wasn't quite that way last night, but it's a reminder of elite teams, what they can do and how they use space and they manipulate you. There's no shame in it. It's just how you recover from it and adapt.
Yeah, absolutely. And that was, I think that was the other thing as well. I think there were two things that made me go to that kind of place, because I wasn't that nervous coming into this tie, because my expectations around the Champions League this season, I was like, we have to make the quarterfinal. Yeah. And I still feel like this. If we lose by the odd goal to a team like Bayern Munich over two legs, I can accept that. Go into it again next year, learn a bit like we've done in the Premier League this year. Yeah. We've so visibly learned from our experiences last year and we look better. And we're a year behind on the Champions League. This is our first crack at it. I was very, very nervous about getting to the quarterfinal because I considered that kind of a minimum and like a barrier to jump. And if we go out of this by the odd goal, you know, I'll be devastated, but I'll think next year if we're in this tie again, I think we'll have a better chance kind of thing. But I think where I got carried away, and maybe the team got carried away, is I actually think we started really well. And when we go 1-0 up, and it's a brilliant goal as well by Saka. Yeah. And, you know, we're talking about all of the things that Bayern did, and rightly so. They're a really good team. I haven't seen anyone go in behind us like that in several weeks, not even City. Not even City made it look like there was 50 yards of green grass behind us, which there always is, but no one ever gets into it. But Bayern were getting into it. But as well, like, how many times was Saka fouled in the first 10 minutes? Davis took him a couple of times, got his booking. I felt they were terrified of Bukayo Saka. And then, you know, we come into the game, we score that goal, we go 1-0 up. It's Saka, like, he's really beginning to, like, knock these fence posts, isn't he? Like, Champions League quarterfinal against Bayern, I'll just whip it far corner. And that is when I started to get carried away, I think, and I was thinking, look at this, we're out playing Munich at home, we've got them now, we've got them on the back foot, it's 1-0. And then Bayern take it from you, right? And but it reminds that their equalizer reminds me a lot of the goal we concede in Lens and the goal we concede in Porto, where there's probably a small error about 40 to 50 yards from our goal, and that is all it takes in the Champions League. A small technical error halfway inside your own half, and three touches later they've got the ball in the net. So I think, tell me where you were psychologically, Clive, when we went 1-0 up. And I think maybe my assessment that Arsenal got too excited might actually be a tell on myself, because I got too excited.
We all got excited. It was all going to plan. And the goal was a thing of beauty, wasn't it? I mean, Ben White's pace of pass, was just unbelievable. It's almost so you're a boxer and you're fighting an opponent, and the opponent's got a cut, and you just keep jabbing away on that cut. And the Bayern's cut was on their left side and our right side, and we kept going there, and we kept going there. We kept jabbing away, jabbing away, jabbing away. The whole game was tilted towards that side. And it was working. It was working. It was really interesting how we got the rotation with Ben White. How a lot of the time, Tim, you saw it, mate, he was higher than Saka, wasn't he?
He was higher. He was very overlappy. Yeah. He's the one who has that chance at 1-0. Yeah. Like, he was in Saka's position.
He was higher. The plan was to exit in one, straight over the top to him. It worked on occasions, floated out on occasions. Saka then came short, turned around, tip-tap. We know the rules, triangle on that side. Sometimes Havertz came over to even make it more of a load. I mean, everything was tilted over to that side. And it was working. It was working. And so I'm thinking, yeah, this is good. But what we've grown accustomed to in the Premier League is that we just keep doing it, tapping away. Then we tap the other side. Then we go down the centre. Every now and again, they'd get the ball out. They would just exit out very, very tightly, get out. And then Kane is very good at receiving the ball. And he received it on the angle from out to into him, which gives him a chance to really shape his body to protect it and buy a foul or lay it off. And then they would go and they'd be really aggressive going and they would run in around us. And as you know, what we do, because we are feeling strong, our centre backs are very high a lot of the times. How often do you see them really high? And they knew we would go and track him all the way in. And they knew we'd have a dog leg in our back line then. So if you get if Ben White's high, and suddenly Gabriel Saliba's high, then you're asking, on occasions, Odegaard, you know, you're asking Jorginho, you're asking people to cover around. And when you start to see that, you know something's broke. You know they've got out of the press up front, and you know they're finding space. Risk versus reward, and they just got there. And it's something I have to say, I've spent half of my adult life, it feels like, disliking Harry Kane. But funny enough, change of shirt, I could suddenly see him. and I thought he played an excellent game. I really did. He made it hard for us to get around him, played the referee well, passing was unreal. And his heavyweight body was the exact good opponent that Gabriel Saliba, not say struggled with. I think they matched him, but it wasn't easy. You know what I mean? They were stressed and stretched. And so, which is what it's all about, isn't it? It's all about that.
Yeah, I have to say I liked him less when he elbowed Gabriel and got away with it. That was a bit of PTSD I could have done with that, as well as him scoring a penalty. But one of the reasons I should have taken notes for this is because we kind of skipped the lineup discussion a little bit. Yeah. But I think we can get that back a little bit here. So, Paul, I listened to the last podcast and Paul completely sold me on the idea that the team wouldn't change.
Yeah.
I felt like there might be one change on the left. I thought maybe Martinelli starts on the left wing, maybe Tomiyasu starts at left back. Didn't think we'd change the whole left side. We did.
Yeah.
We'll come on to Kivior in a minute because I think that's relevant for Bayern's goals. But what was your kind of impression of the lineup? And I think the substitutes had a real impact in this game. And I think you could look at that both ways. You could say good decision to have those finishers, you know, have those particular guys come on for the last half hour, or you could look at it as a bit of a mistake. We'll perhaps leave the Kivior one in a minute, but what was your impression of the whole lineup? And I guess, because I know you don't really care that much about the lineup, but with the substitutes that were clearly going to come on with the last kind of 30, 25 minutes in mind.
Yeah, I thought we'd have a more defensive fullback start the game, I promise you. I think most of us would have started with Tomiyasu. And that's not just saying it in hindsight. I think most of us recognise that Sane being a lefty on the right, that sort of suits Tomiyasu. He's the fastest of all the fullbacks. And so he didn't start. So I just dismissed that and said he can't be fit. And so the next best defensive fullback that we have fit is Kivior. So I just thought, you know what? That's all right by me. Martinelli, well, we had a debate that we should Martinelli start anyway. And he started him. I wasn't too worried. I think maybe both players had averaged a poor game, shall we say, for differing reasons. I know I keep saying this, Tim, but I never worry too much about the start 11 because it's key for me, adaptation in-game. So what was we trying to do for that starting 11? What were the roles? Clear the way where Ben White was playing. We wanted a left-footed centre-back, third defender on the left-hand side, not a full-back. What did Bayern do? Make him be a full-back. Make him come and get people right on the touchline. That's what people do. Right, so they don't let you stand where you want to stand. They make you stand where you don't want to stand. Right, so they stretched us out a little bit there. It worked for us. We got one goal, nearly got two, but didn't quite get the second goal. So the risk versus reward didn't really happen, you know. But we were in control. We were in control of these things. There is a discussion to have around the left hand side relationship. It's a discussion to have around left hand side. Full stop, isn't there? Because if you look at the Kivior Rice Martinelli sort of triangle on that side. Mate, where was Rice playing? Honestly, I rewatched the game. He's just running around, inefficient use of his running. Good, we're not questioning the player here, right? It's up to us to put him in position to succeed. Well, I don't think we did. I think they went round him on the press. He's still going to have his moments. He's got great passing ability and tackling ability. He can have his moments. But I look at his game and look at how many Ks he did. That was not right. You know, that was not the best use of him. You wouldn't see Rodri doing that. We have to ask ourselves a question. Is he our Rodri or not? Because I think it's time for him to be our Rodri and see the game, stop transitions, make sure things don't happen, because I've never seen our centre-back so unprotected. That's no criticism of anybody else. It's just the structure of the team. Say, tell me what you saw and when have you seen that? It just hasn't happened. You know, so, sorry, mate, you can say something there?
No.
Oh, sorry. and on the left-hand side, we have to ask ourselves a question. To Zinchenko-Jesus' relationship is really strong, very strong for their City days. I was starting to see something of Jesus on left-hand side. But you know what? We don't know where he is fitness-wise, although I think he was probably disappointed not to start. And Martinelli starts. We're not worried, are we? We're not saying, oh, that's a terrible decision, until the game transpires. And then we go, you know what? He looked a bit young, didn't get the ball. He wasn't moving like Sane was out to win, was he? He wasn't moving like Trossard was to go and get those chances in the key zones. And then we can talk about it, but it's a reaction to what we've seen. You know, so when the team came out, I was okay. I was absolutely okay. I got my hand up. I'm okay with it. They've got their reasons. I can see what they're doing. They're tilting the team to the right. And then we thought, you know what? This is not quite, I don't quite feel comfortable. And at 2-1, we made a change. And we made a change, yeah, not by bringing on a fullback, by bringing on a midfielder. Let's be honest.
Yeah, I was going to say, do you think if it was 1-1, because, so I tweeted, and I wouldn't usually do this, but I just thought it was so clear that Kibior had to come off, and I knew he was going to cut. It was a very, like...
What was the moment that made you think he had to come off? I'll tell you mine. You tell me the moment when you think he had to come off.
I mean, I'm tempted to say Sane bursting away from him for the first goal, but Sane burst
second
away
goal.
From...
The second goal, sorry.
Yeah, for the penalty. But then Sane burst away from a
everybody.
Few players. And like I always say, it was on my side. So I get like, I often over-index what happens on my side.
Yep.
I just felt there were a few times where, and again, I'm not necessarily blaming him individually, but I just thought there were a few times where it's like he doesn't know whether to go or stay. That's what I kept seeing, that hesitation. Yep. And that's down to Bayern being really good at stretching us out. But I saw him so many times going, I don't know, like, I could go, but then I'm leaving loads of space behind me. Yep. But if I stay and I let Sane, I saw that indecision
spooked,
a lot. And
it?
I think, I thought it was really interesting in Andrew's post this morning on Ask Blog. He was talking about how he thinks we need to buy a left back if it's not going to be Timber. And it's actually really interesting because so I think and I thought when I saw the team sheet, I thought starting Kibior was a mistake because I felt the City game was a bit above him, and I'm not killing him for that. That is the hardest game in world football, and he's not really a left back. What we really need him for is if Gabriel ever gets an injury.
Yeah.
That's what we really need him for. Like second choice left centre back, third choice left back. Like I've got no problems with him in the squad at all. I hope he's happy with that and he wants to stay. But I felt the City game, like sometimes a guy can come into the team for 7 or 8 games and be okay, but eventually I think it can catch you. And I just felt after that City game, and I thought this was happening as well because he didn't play a minute of the other two games. I thought it was time to shake hands and say, thanks so much. You've been great, but this is the real business end now. You're still a big part of the squad and everything like that, but Zinchenko and Tomiyasu are back now. And I am at the moment, because I think what we've got right is we've got a timeshare at left back between Zinchenko and Tomiyasu. I thought that would happen in this game.
Yeah.
Completely relaxed about which order it happens, whether it's one starting and the other coming. I really don't mind. I do think it kind of has to be a 60-30, but I've been thinking that was quite a good thing. But I guess when you do that, it's an admission that neither gives you completely what you want. And yeah. both of them got big, obvious strengths. Basically, what you need is you need Zinniasu or Tomichenko or whatever. Like, you need obvious. To put them in a splicer.
We haven't got the right player there, have we? So we adjust accordingly for it. And we find if we were having a WhatsApp during the game, we'd say, no, we need to make a change there. And then Zinchenko would get beat. We'd say, can we make another change? Let's get someone on. Because that's telling us it wasn't quite ideal. So I tell you the moment when I thought, I wasn't worried about him. Player's going to get beat, right? So I don't worry about that, because if we're other players got beat.
And by Sane, most players going to get beat. He reminded me why I thought he was brilliant at Man City.
Like, yeah,
absolutely. I was looking at him and I was like, that's the wide player I want. Yeah. I think we really need another wide player. And again, it was down my side in the first half. Yeah, I was looking at him. I was just going, obviously we're not going to get him, but it's like, that's what we need.
Yeah, he was outstanding. And they snuck the ball outside of Mark Lely into his feet. And he did a bit of a lucky turn, but he reacted to his lucky turn, right? Then he runs off and he's going to get beat. But at the moment before the game, just for half time, when I rewatched the game this morning, when Saliba and Gabriel got the ball, and Tim, they passed the ball together about five or six times. And Kivior's there on the left hand side and he's in space and he didn't pass to him. They kicked a 1, 2, 4, 5. And then it just went out to the right. And Saliba kicked it out. And Kivior's standing there on his own. And Martinelli's on his own on the left-hand side. And I thought, he's got to come off. Because they don't trust him on the ball. And this was the reason why I defended Kivior at City. I'm going to explain this, and hopefully Elliot's listening. The reason why I defended him at City was we had four narrow centre-backs in our back four, inside the box. Kivior was fantastic at that. You know, back post, Haaland picking on people. For that game, an off-the-ball game, blocking people, distances, he was great. He's basically a centre-back inside the box, right? So in this game, we needed more on-the-ball ability. So don't worry about him getting beat. On the ball, he didn't offer anything. So they could key on our right-hand side. You see what I mean? And so that was the issue for me. So it was on the ball. This was an on the ball game. And Kivior is not as good on the ball as Timber, as Zinchenko, and maybe even Tomiyasu. He's probably the fourth in that list on the ball. Defending in his box on the back post, he's right up there. You know, he's right up there. And that's why I defend him in the context of the game at City. Context of this game, he didn't see me defending him because we needed something else. And what did we do at halftime? We brought on our best on-the-ball defender to get on the ball and bring some composure to this team that was losing its marbles. You know, and he came on. And by the way, he got beat. Maybe more he got beat. But on the ball, he gave us something we didn't have. He gave us something that Jorginho wasn't allowed to give us because they shadow marked him the whole time. Declan Rice was running around trying to get them. So we had no one else to get on the ball. So we just flipped it around, tilted it back. White came back into our normal three. Zinchenko pops in front. Old school Arsenal, 3-2 rather than a 2-3. Old school Arsenal, two in front. Let's get our feet on the ball, shall we? And slow this shit down. That's literally what we did. So it wasn't really a complete change, you know, one for one. Because we'd have... Tomiyasu would have been that player. Do you see what I mean? So you start Tomiyasu, you start Kivior. We brought on a midfielder, number 10 by design, to get on the ball. What that did to the rest of the team, maybe is for a discussion, right? Because as soon as you bring him on, Jorginho's redundant, isn't he? He's just redundant. So he had to come off, you know? And so it's a knock-on effect, right? So this is why I love the game. So many different shapes, so many different faces, but we were able to change and react. And Tim, it wasn't so long ago, people were changing their face on us and we were talking about it afterwards. But we didn't do anything. It seemed that we were able to do that this time. And I was really excited by the whole change of face tactically in this game.
Yeah, absolutely. And with Jorginho as well, like and I'm pointing the finger squarely at you, Elliot, because I know you're listening. We talk about Jorginho like he's 40 years old. And he's 31. And we're like, oh, he can't play twice in a week. It's like, It's 31. That's like your physical prime. But I did, Clive, I did see him take on, it's not the gel. What's the little pouch they kind
yeah,
of,
yeah, yeah. It's they have about, gel.
About 5 minutes before he came off, I saw someone go and get one of those for him. So, but I do think it was probably, depending on the score, I mean, I think it was probably always in the plan that he'd play about 65, 70 minutes, yeah. Whether it's we're 2-1 up, let's bring Partey on.
We were happy with that, down, weren't we? I was happy. Were you happy with that? Absolutely yep. fine. Absolutely fine.
Yeah, we've got the players that can share the game around there. So, I mean, at halftime, what was your... Because I haven't listened to the instant reaction yet. I haven't had a chance. But at halftime, I felt... I think just because of the way I felt really good when we were 1-0 up and I felt we were in control. And then I felt like I saw an Arsenal I hadn't seen for a little while where we lost control. And I've been talking so much about how I love how solid we've been lately. I've loved like staring into the distance when we're 2 goals ahead against Luton and Brighton, just going, you've got no chance. You're not coming back into this. And I loved at Brighton on Saturday, everyone was singing boring, boring Arsenal. Yeah. Loved it. Haven't heard that in years. And so I felt like I saw an Arsenal I hadn't seen in a while where we did look a little bit stretched. We did look exposed, but we lost control.
Yeah.
Of the game. And so I felt like I definitely thought Kivior was coming off. I just didn't know who was coming on for him. I think you've made a really good point there about Arsenal learning in the game, but even, well, we'll come on to this later, even the way we approached the last 20 minutes, I think was a bit more mature. But what was your kind of feeling at half time, I guess emotionally as much as anything?
I just wanted to settle. I just wanted us to recognise what was there for us. I felt that Kivior would come off only because we needed more ball players. You know, I wasn't sure which way he's going to go, but when I saw Zinchenko, I thought, yeah, it makes sense. You know, again, no drama for me. You know, none whatsoever. And I was thinking to myself, okay, what? How many people are in this game? So what I felt with him was this game was in control. Until David Raya's blue shirt appeared in the left-hand side of the TV screen. This game was nothing. We had them, we were fine, and suddenly our goalkeeper, who's also inexperienced, I just watched it this morning, and the commentator said that Manuel Neuer, this is his 137th Champions League appearance. 137, right? What's our goalkeeper done? Is this his third knockout game? And he's 28? You know, and suddenly he looked edgy. He kept wanting to feel the ball at halftime, feel the ball before the game. He looked edgy. He just appeared in the screen and everything just wobbled for a moment. So I had this feeling when we wobbled for 15 minutes. So we were jabbing away at their cut and they went bang, 2 on the chin. And suddenly you're punch drunk. You're punch drunk. Can I just get to the stall at halftime and sit down and just get my breath back and get my head right? And so I can refocus on what we need to do in the second half. And for anyone who has been knocked in the chin, you know what it's like when you're punch drunk. You're just not, you're there, but you're not in the room. You're not in the room when anything doesn't look right. Perspective has gone. You're jumping out on people. Declan Rice jumped out on the penalty when he should have dropped in. If your centre back is up there, you got to drop in. He jumps out. People running off shoulders. You know why? He's flipping knackered trying to get their press. Inefficient. Running. He's trying to get things, trying to get in the game, have a moment. Every one of that back five had a moment. A moment. You know, the keeper, Kivior had a moment when he got turned. Gabriel had a moment when he could have put it the line side, safe side, when he's chopped it back, rather than put it in the interior. You miss on the interior, you're open to a counter-attack. Saliba had a number of clearances where he was agriculture, would normally take it down on his chin, juggles it 4 times, then goes forward. But the pressure of the game meant he was giving the ball back to them and they were transitioning on us. Now, Ben White, I thought, was excellent. I've got to say, I thought he's excellent. And England need to look at that seriously. And by the way, if Lewis Dunk can play for England, Eric Dyer can play for England. You know, let's be honest here as football watchers. You know, he was a lot better than Dunk, a lot better than Dunk. And had a decent game. And so with all of them having moments, What have we craved? What have we been talking about? Defensive stability. And we were uncertain in the game, and we all felt it. And so for me, at halftime, Tim, I wanted that certainty to come back. I wanted that composure to come back. And let's be honest, there's one player who has got courage. He may be flimsy, but he's got courage on that ball, and he is composed. There is nobody got more courage and composure on the ball in our squad to hit that, to answer that question that's being posed, than Zinchenko. May not be the best penalty box defender at Man City away. Do you see where I'm going? But what we need on this day, he was the perfect replacement at halftime.
I feel like people have gone to a dark place with Zinchenko now, where they're waiting for mistakes and like really waiting for them, almost willing them to happen. And then it's like, jump up. Like, this player is light and shade. I really think it's as simple as that. He's not a fantastic defender, no, but he's amazing on the ball. And that is really, really valuable to us. I almost think it's just outright dishonest to somehow dismiss both of those things. They're both true. Yeah. And like, he's not a liability in this team because of what he gives us. But at the same time, he's not totally, but like, you've got to take the rough with the smooth with him, but you kind of got to acknowledge both sides. But I think you make a good point on their goal as well. Cause again, this is where I should have taken notes for the podcast, but on their equalizer, like, yeah, David Raya goes for a walk. He doesn't need to go on. That was a bit Ramsdale to me. That was a bit caught up.
He was nearly in a semicircle, Tim. He was nearly in a semicircle, honestly. I couldn't believe it. And he spooked Gabriel completely.
Yeah, absolutely. It totally spooked Gabriel, and his pass is not quite there. And then it's not a good pass for Kivior to receive, particularly on his weak side. And yeah, it was. I don't like saying a Ramsdale moment because I don't want to remember Ramsdale like that. Again, I think a lot more in credit than debit, but that's kind of the thing. We brought Raya in because he doesn't usually do stuff like that. Yeah. I think it's his first like mistake for a while, but it's a mistake. Yeah. And I think it was one where he got caught up in things a little bit. So in the second half then, you know, I think there are two ways, like I feel like there are two ways to look at this, in that there's a part of me that thinks once Bayern go 2-1 up, they don't get excited. They cool the game down. They buy their fouls. You know, they don't go for the jugular. They've kind of calmed it down. But at the same time, they concede an equaliser, and they were 2-1 up, and they don't get their 2-1.
Yeah.
They kind of get equalised on. So perhaps before we go into, you know, I want to come to the substitutions next.
I am still going to tell you to shave your privates. I'm not going to leave that unsaid. So it is a reminder that you need to visit Manscaped. You need to buy all their products and then shave all your privates. All your privates? How many privates do you have? You know what? That's none of my business. However many you have, shave them all. That's right. I am in the land of sun, and that means bathing suits, and that means I've got my collection of Speedos out. I wouldn't feel comfortable wearing them if it wasn't for the lawnmower and the tonics and lotions that they have down there. So why the lawnmower? Long battery life. You can use it in the shower. It has skin-safe technology. They've now added a foil blade so you can go completely smooth as opposed to just trimming and getting pretty smooth. So the foil blade is great. There's a light so you can see what you're doing. There's the beard hedger. So if you do want to clean up your beard, they have tools for that as well. They have a face shaver. I brought the little travel face shaver that they have, which I love, because I could charge it before I left. I won't need to charge it on this whole trip. So I can use that to shave my face, use a lawnmower to shave my privates, all while I'm here without having to worry about charging it instead of just some old razor that you use to do the job. Look, it's this simple. It's something that we all do, and you just should have the right products to do it. Plus, you get a shed travel bag, the boxers, all that. So go ahead and get the lawnmower's products. You're going to love them. Go to manscaped.com. Use promo code ArsenalVision, get 20% off from free shipping. That's 20% off from free shipping, manscaped.com. Do it now. And this podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp. BetterHelp isn't online therapy. It's just therapy. It's just therapy. And therapy is just one of the more important things you can do for yourself. I think I mentioned this on a previous podcast, but like my mother moved to Minnesota to be closer to us, my mom and dad. They're in their 80s. They wanted to be closer to my wife and I and our kids so they could see their grandkids more. But as a result of moving, like my mom doesn't have her therapist now and she's not driving anymore. So that makes it hard. So something that she's done her whole life that was really helpful for her and that really, I think, helped her process things she deals with, she couldn't do it. Well, I said to her the other day, why don't you use BetterHelp? And she's like, oh, that's that online thing. I said, it's not that online thing. It's just therapy. And so she's like, all right, you know, that's actually a really good point because I can do something I've always liked. I can find someone I connect with. I can re-engage in this thing that I lost because I can't drive anymore. So it just shows you, you know, this is something that we should do. And BetterHelp makes it easy and accessible and affordable to do it on your terms, camera on, camera off, you name it. So learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/vision today to get 10% off your first month. It's BetterHelp, HELP.com/vision. And last but certainly not least is Unified. Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, which is, of course, also a world-class athlete, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. Okay? The Unified, and that's UNIFYD Healing, is new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by the Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, you want to listen up. The technology promotes wellness, relaxation, purification, rejuvenation. Whether you're here in the U.S., I'm actually not in the U.S. right now, so here in this tropical location, or hundreds of other locations around the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com. That's UNIFYD, unifiedhealing.com/arsenalvision to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, UNIFYD, healing.com/arsenalvisionclub. Is that enough of that?
Indeed.
What was your... Again, I guess your kind of emotional and tactical response to the second half up until the point of the equaliser. Do you think that Bayern were kind of controlling it and we got through once and thank God for that, et cetera, et cetera? Or do you feel it was we were a bit more in it than that and we were a bit calmer and more mature ourselves?
I thought they blocked off Jorginho really well, Tim, and they... Musiala and Kane sometimes at the front too, but sometimes they brought Sane in off the, you know, your side, you know what I'm talking about, off the right, and he tucked in. And basically they forced us into the wide areas. And maybe that's why Arteta played Martinelli, hoping that he can force this wide or we'll go one-on-one. And what about Kimmich, mate? He's got light feet, hasn't he? He knows how to play fullback. Jesus, he's 29 years of age. He was absolutely brilliant. You know, I don't know what... I know there's rumours of him wanting to go. He's picking his clubs. I can see why. He's literally said what club he would go to.
Yeah, well, they're having an argument, aren't they, at the moment? Because Tuchel has lots of arguments with his players because I don't think he's a very good manager at all. But because he plays at right back and in midfield, yeah, doesn't he? And usually he's been playing at right back. And now Tuchel's going, he's like, screw this, I'm putting you where I want to. But you know what I mean? Like there is that kind of, he can play almost like that Philipp Lahm type
deal,
he's a really good, where he can play both.
He's a good player, man. I'm not sure the entire history, but most of the time he does play in centre mid and he'd be great in centre mid. But obviously he started as a right back and then he was one of the first ones that Pep used to invert, you know, and obviously he could do that in there. Konrad Lima, a player that I think they got from RB Leipzig, someone I've been YouTube watching for years, and I thought he was excellent, but he's not normally a first choice. Goretzka was excellent. Let's be honest, Goretzka and Lima won the battle in centre mid. We have to hold our hands up and say this, you know, because it's no problem, you know, it's no problem at all. They won the battle in there. Complete physical, quick. Lima's quick across the ground, you know, out to the sides, back into the middle. And so, yeah, they were forcing us out wide, and then Lima and Goretzka were getting out there. Goretzka getting back to the centre-backs when they split, and Lima getting to the touch lines. And we were doing fine, but there's something about Bayern that their talent is in the top end of the pitch. And I don't know about you two, we were watching it. I just felt we'd get more chances. You know, I just felt we'd get more chances. And we made the change. So we brought on Jesus. So I'm going to go there now, Tim. I mean, Jesus didn't start. I thought, I wonder what that conversation was like. You know, with him not starting. I hope that's fitness. That's not one conversation I want to have. And because I've been quite interested in him playing off the left. And not because he's a Martinelli-style winger, but when we do get the ball into the box, we have two centre-forwards, if you know what I mean. We've Havertz in him. And I like that. Jesus was getting criticism for missing chances at City and was it Brighton the other day? But for me, I'm thinking, mate, look at the chances he's getting. Look at the volume of shots he's getting. How many, you know, Martinelli, I think, had three shots he's getting. I don't think they were great shots. But I didn't sense he was going to score. With Jesus, I think, okay, I know you're not a good finisher, but look at the quality of these chances you're getting on the end of. You look like a forward who jumps out wide. And I thought, I started to like that. And then we changed it. I thought, that's fine. But what we did when he came on, we could suddenly find him. And I looked at it again this morning and I thought, why are we finding him? Havertz goes back into the eight. And I don't think that's done, by the way. He's doing well at nine. And I never said he'd be a nine. He's a 9-8 rather than an 8-9 when he arrived. But he can do the eight just as well. The role doesn't change. He's just top of the box. He's just 5, 6, 7 yards to the left. Top of the box player. And what him and Odegaard did to him, they split quite wide. And then Jesus came into the middle and suddenly we can find his feet. And suddenly their centre-backs are not sure what to do. You know, and another face to the game. Another tactical change to the game. Jesus gets the ball to feet. Well, if you know what he's going to do next, I'm not too sure because I don't. Right, twist, turn, get it off, knock it off, goes into the half space, gets it back. He bamboozled them. And he gave us confidence that we could get out of them in a different way, you know. And so I thought he was so, so, so impressive how he picked up the game, didn't sulk, for whatever reason he didn't start. I'm not going to go there. I'm just speculating. Didn't sulk and just went for the game and went for them. And I just thought it was another man coming on the pitch that may be used to this level, used this environment. Mm-hmm. And I thought it told instantly. What do you think, mate?
Yeah, I thought Jesus was excellent when he came on. I think Bayern kind of had the measure of the Havertz thing. Yeah. And so what do? We completely changed up the threat.
Yeah.
Totally different type of threat. And one of the things about Jesus as well, I come back to one of my favourite ever quotes in football, Pep Guardiola, when he left. He said, if you play Jesus for 5 minutes, he gives you the best 5 minutes of his life. Mm. And he is a good impact sub because of his, like, basically you really see when Jesus starts, I think the first 20 minutes is his best period of the game.
Yeah.
Because he's so slippery and he's such a live wire, and you know but he's also good in the last 20 minutes. If you can bring him on in the last 20 minutes when everyone's a bit tired, everyone's a bit frazzled, and I think if you've been dealing with a threat like Havertz, and then Jesus comes on, who at the best of times is like the roadrunner, and you know you're Eric Dier and you're De Ligt, and all of a sudden you're dealing with a completely different threat, someone who's really sharp at turning, you know, gives you twisted blood and doesn't stop going, and I think you're right. I think he kind of did want to prove a point as well, and to your point, I kind of felt he should have started because of that Champions League pedigree kind of thing. To be honest, it's not, you know, I felt that was weird. I kind of say I wasn't all right with it. I felt that was a bit strange. And I think if Arteta could go back, he would definitely not do that. You know, Jesus comes on and he makes a really, really big impact. So again, you can look at it both ways. You can look at it and say, well, then he should have started. But then you can look at it and say, but he had a really, really big impact on the game. And I guess that brings us to the equaliser as well, right? Like, for all his qualities, Havertz isn't doing that. Havertz isn't twisting and turning and feinting and, you know, turning those defenders who were beginning to look a bit comfortable. And I think also the coolness to take that step inside when you've got 60,000 people, including me, yelling, you know, shoot, get the shot off, shoot, shoot. And he just tucks inside and gives it to Trossard. And I know James on the Askcast has said a lot that he feels Trossard is the best finisher at the club.
Yeah,
I can't disagree with that. He tends to put those away. He's putting them away in big games, left foot, right foot. It's just got that lovely kind of, you know, it's not quite instep. It's not quite laces. It's somewhere in between. It's firm, but it's placed well. And, you know, that's two attacking substitutions we make who combine to get that equaliser, who bring their qualities, because Havertz and Martinelli would not score that goal together. Oh. They might score a different type of goal together, like the one we saw against Man City in October, you know, Havertz knocking it down and Martinelli running onto it. But you wouldn't get Havertz to Martinelli like that. So, you know, big contribution. Leo Trossard, by the way, 14 goals, I believe, this season. I mean, what an incredibly valuable player he's proving to be as well.
Absolutely. And again, it's just wisdom. A 29-year-old and a 27-year-old, him. He looks at Jesus twisting and turning. He doesn't stand there and admire him. He runs inward, doesn't he? He runs inward thinking, if he gets his head up, I want to be there. Get some pieces. Do you know what I mean? That's exactly what happened. And he gets his head up, calls for it, and he slots it. And he has got a lovely way of kicking the football. I'm a bit of a nerd looking at contact. And he's got a lovely way of kicking the football. And when he struck it, we all sort of knew it was going in. Do you know what I mean? You start to stand, don't you? You start to get out because you know where it's going. So I think he did it similar to Sevilla. And he did one, obviously, against Porto. And, mate, he can just slot. He can slot it, you know, a bit Smith Rowe-ish.
That's Trossard pulling it back to Jesus. I'd probably stay seated until it was firmly in the back of the net, put it that way.
If it's going to Jesus, I'd probably start scrolling on Twitter, look at my phone and just wait for the U. And so, yeah, it was a nice slot, nice finish. And it's a difficult one, right? Because when we come away from these games, we look at who's not played. We think, well, he should play next time. It's all based on the moment that stays in your mind. This was a transition game. Jorginho's not a transition six. He's a controlling six. He played against Man City at home. Spotless. Different game. Distances were shorter. He could pop that ball around, control it. We have to realise when you're assessing a player, assess him in the context of that game. You know? I think there's a couple of players I'm a little bit worried about. One, from how we're using him in Rice, which I touched on. I think this might be a better way to use him. Mate, I don't mind Jorginho being one up. You know, one plus one, you know, or do a true double pivot, but Rice be the one that stays. I'm fine with that. I am.
Going forward against Brighton, he was creating those overloads on the right a lot, and it was kind of Rice sitting a bit more.
Yeah, and he's a counter-presser. So rather than letting him worry about running all the way back in, like he did on the penalty, where he couldn't quite get there, made a sort of a half tackle, which ended up passing it in for them, don't make him do that. Make him counter-press high up so he can gamble. If he doesn't work out, we got cover. If he does work out, we score. Do you see what I mean? So it's a slight tweak to that. But the Martinelli one worries me, Tim, if I'm honest with you. And the reason why it worries me, and it may be fitness. Everyone's saying it's fitness, and so I'm not going to go heavy on it because we know he's on his second contract. He's got the brass in his pocket. One of our future stars was playing brilliant till he got injured at Sheffield United. Was playing absolutely brilliant, and we've lost him for a bit, and we need him back. But I thought off the ball, he wasn't affecting their exits on that left-hand side, and on the ball, he was too fixated on being wide and stretching. Now, Trossard doesn't do that. You know, you gotta roam, and he can roam, and he needs to roam. He needs to feel free to roam. I don't want to hear people saying it's tactics. No. There's a time to stretch. There's a time to link. You need to know when it is. Trossard knows when it is, you know, and he gets himself in those high shot positions. He needs to get involved a little bit more, and it's just going through a bit of a interesting moment, shall we say. And the Rice situation for me is more efficiency. You know, is it efficient the way we're using him? Well, Bayern have lost the ball in high press situations. They lose the ball. So I can see why Arteta did it. We're going to have our best pressing guy just charging in and see if we can nick it and score. So it's not stupid. It's just something we tried to do. Didn't work for long enough because they got out. Do you see what I mean? And so, but these are questions we have to ask ourselves as we're looking to get better. Are we using these people correctly all the time? And every game we play, there'll be one or two people where the game didn't suit them. Doesn't mean they're bad players.
Yeah, absolutely. And what you were saying there about about Martinelli and the wide players, I guess it reminds me a little bit of work that Arteta was very credited with Sterling and Sane. And when that City team which I think, well, who cares who my favourite City team is, but that's kind of my favourite Pep City team, if that makes sense. Because I think they really worked out with Sterling and Sane, because they could go inside and outside. And yeah, I think you're right. I think Saka's got that. I think Trossard comes inside, but perhaps hasn't got the outside game. And Martinelli goes outside, but hasn't got the inside game. Maybe we've got like a bit of a Zinniasu, Tomichenko exactly. kind of situation there. But I'm confident Martinelli can learn that and kind of learn to come inside a little bit more. And let's face it, for the Brazilian national team, he's competing with Vinicius Junior, who yeah. is another player who knows when to go on the touchline, he knows when to go on the corner of the six-yard box. And I do think that's probably something that Martinelli has to learn. I should have done an ad break a lot earlier than this, but we'll let Elliot do his ad read. And then after that, we'll talk about perhaps the controversial ending of the game, the Saka kind of non-penalty, and then perhaps we'll talk a little bit about what the approach might be against Aston Villa and the second leg of this game right after this. Okay, so hopefully you enjoyed Elliot's favourite contribution to the pod, the ad read. Clive, we get to 2-2. I think both teams, they don't shake hands on it, but I think both teams were kind of okay with 2-2 at that stage. Emotionally, I felt all right with 2-2 because we weren't exactly hammering the door down to get that equaliser, but we got it. And once we got it, I thought, okay, I think if we'd been going there 2-1 down, I really think that would be so, so difficult. I really do. It's still going to be very difficult, but I really think it was so important to not lose this game. And I kind of think whether that was just an emotional reaction or whether we were just mature and kind of said, let's not do what we did in Porto. Let's not like give the ball away in our own half in stoppage time and get chinned again. Or whether it was just everyone was a bit tired, I don't know. But in the very last seconds of the game, we do have a controversy when a ball creeps through almost by accident, and all of a sudden you've got Saka. I mean, he'd been kicked from pillar to post again, and he wasn't. Yeah. I think if that chance happens in the first 10 minutes, I think he zips past. But he was limping at that stage. He gets to the ball. There's contact between Neuer and Saka, no doubt about it. What was, it's not given. The referee blows the final whistle 30 seconds early. I don't know if you saw him, Clive. He was off down that tunnel. He ran down that tunnel without his assistance. I've only ever seen that once at a game I've been at. That was a game I went to in Brazil where the home team conceded a questionable red card and a questionable penalty. And if you're a referee and you do that to the home team in Brazil, running off the pitch is the most sensible thing to do because you are genuinely, your safety is in danger. So he ran off the pitch, which tells me he was a little bit spooked by the whole thing. However, do you think that was a penalty or not?
Well, that's at my end this time. So I'm looking down and I'm thinking, you're absolutely right. It was a nice, incisive pass. I think he missed his original target and the second target came into the frame. Right, Thomas Partey pass. Normal thing, shake and bake to right-hand side, slice. And Saka read it and got on the end of it and found energy from nowhere. And he ran through and I thought, Tim, much like when Trossard strikes it, you're thinking, this is it, aren't you? Because he knows what he's doing in these situations. And he shifts it to the side. And he seemed to get kicked down. And I'm thinking, well, that's a penalty. It has to be. If it goes to VAR, it's still going to be a penalty. When I watched it again on the train on the way home, there was something unnatural about his right leg. He must need to put it on the floor one more time. He sort of was reaching. He needed to get his foot on the floor. Because anything happens after that, you would have got it. But he left his foot in the air too long. He just got his stripe out of broke. And he got taken down. Now, it's very difficult to accept. And in the context of this game, when there's a few events and things happen, I'm a big believer in allowing players to win the game. So obviously we had the Kane elbow. You know what? That's a dark yellow one for me. He's looked for him. But what he's done, he's thrown the arm that the referee can't see. And he's the referee and he's done it cleverly. And he's gone down. He's wanted to take Gabriel. He's wanted to take him out for ages. He's probably seen the comps.
Hit him in the throat as well. Because if you catch him in the lip, there's blood, nose, blood. You catch someone in the throat, no blood, no marks.
Mate, that's the game. And I hope he'll return leg when Kane's Achilles are hanging off, that the referee doesn't send off Gabriel neither, because that is the game, right? That is the game. Let it play. I thought on the other penalty with Gabriel, do you touch on that, Tim? The penalty with Gabriel and the keeper?
Yeah, we should.
Yeah, I'm going to try to explain what happens there normally. What we normally do in that situation is the goalkeeper does not take the goal kick. The defender takes the goal kick. And then the defender from the side takes it and he puts it to the goalkeeper. And the reason why we do that, if you go to the defender, from goalkeeper to defender, the teams can automatically curve off the side they want you to go out. They want you to go down. When you go back inside, they're not sure which side you're going to exit. So they have to hold and freeze until Rea decides which side to clip. So our way of play is always Gabriel to Rea. So Rea just takes the kick. And Gabriel's saying, normal stuff. I'll pick it up and take the kick. He hasn't realised the referee's blown it. And I actually think, back to the context of the game, let these players win it. If they won that game on that basis, that would have been wrong to me, would have smelt wrong, because nobody was charging in. There's no advantage they were trying to gain. And we weren't trying to gain the advantage. We were just trying to get a restart. And there was on the letter of the law, you could say it's a penalty, but actually it was just probably Gabriel didn't hear the whistle. I just thought it's me to take it, normal standard goal kick. And this is what we do, you know? So tactically, he's thinking, this is where we are. But it shows you the whole washing machine in the brain of a Champions League quarterfinals. So these things can happen if you're not fully focused, right? So the penalty felt, going back to the Saka penalty, it left a bad taste, didn't it, Tim? Walk out the ground. It sort of left a bad taste. And so, for that moment, I wish I was on my settee, where I could see it all and I could hear the punditry. When you're at the ground, it just left a bad taste. It made you feel like you're lost, you know? And when really we achieved some great things in that game from a sporting status perspective, from a crowd perspective, huge game for the club. Everybody was there. I even saw David Dean before the game. Everybody was there. Big, and it was just brilliant.
I think Kim Kardashian was there, wasn't she?
It just felt like a massive event.
She got lucky in the silver member ballot then.
Yeah, she did. I'm sure she got a few contacts, mate. and I don't want us to lose sight of that because of what we think walk out the ground was a decision. Well, actually, in the context of the home game, I can live with it. I can. It was more penalty than not. But I could see, if I'm being objective, I could see why they didn't give it. And that's what we try to do on this, don't we, to be objective.
Yeah, I think your assessment of it is absolutely right. It really reminded me of that game where we beat Leicester on Valentine's Day, the last-minute Danny Welbeck goal. Leicester go 1-0 up with a penalty, and Jamie Vardy is in almost exactly the same situation in exactly the same area of the box against Monreal. And he does what Saka did, but to your point, he kicks down onto Monreal's ankle and then goes down and Leicester get the penalty. I think I'm with you. I think it's more a penalty than not, just because I think Saka has to take a lot of evasive action to avoid Neuer. I think there is no rule saying a player has to get out of the way, even if he can. He doesn't have to. I think if you have to run away from the goal and the ball to get round a challenge, you've been fouled. But to your point, you're right. Saka saw it and he went for it too early. He should have just carried on going and let Neuer take him. But instead, got a little bit excited and he put the leg up. And that's what makes it look like he's looking for it. Of course he is. Yeah. There is no rule, by the way, that says you can't look for a penalty. That's like, it might be a game, a part of the game that we don't like. I don't like it that much. But there is no rule saying you can't do that. The rule is you cannot dive. It is not you have to get out of everyone's way or that you have to not look for a penalty. You're allowed to do that. But yeah, I can see why it wasn't given. I can see why VAR didn't consider it a high enough bar. Yeah. I'd be really interested to know what the decision might have been if it was 2-2 in the last minute of the second leg. I do wonder if it had been 10 minutes before the end.
Yeah.
I think it might have been given, but I think I think there's nothing wrong with this either, by the way. I think there's nothing wrong with a referee taking context into the situation and saying, actually, if I give this, this is the last kick of the game and it's almost certainly finishing 3-2. Whereas if there's 15, 20 minutes left, it's not as final. And yeah. I think it's fine for a referee to say, this is really final if I give yeah. this. Like, Arsenal win this leg 3-2. If I yeah. give this. And so personally, I do understand. I think it's a penalty. I understand why it's not given. There's a whole other 90 minutes to go. So I don't think we can point to it. If we don't go through, I don't think we can really blame that, no. as it were. But you're right. I know how I ended the game. I was on my feet and you can probably hear my throat's a little bit hoarse. And someone came up and accosted me as well at the final whistle and said, make sure you talk about this on the podcast. And so we have. But yeah, in the kind of cold light of day, I can see why it wasn't given, even if I think it kind of was. And I think any other time than stoppage time, that's probably given. Yeah. I think that's enough on that decision. And yeah, you're right. Like the Gabriel Raya one, that could be given. But yeah, I think it would be really silly to yeah. give that. I don't think you have to decide games like that. There's no advantage there. Perhaps for the second leg then, I came away from this game feeling, I feel less now like I did yesterday in terms of Arsenal managing the emotion of it. I think actually having talked it out a bit, perhaps my assessment was a little harsh immediately after the game, because immediately after the game, I thought, I think it might help us to be away second, because I want us to go into boring, boring Arsenal mode. Yeah. Again, I want us to do, again, Bayern are much better than Brighton and Luton, but I want that arm's length kind of stuff that I don't think we did enough in this tie. And I think almost being away forces us to lean into that a little bit more. What's your feeling going into the second leg?
Yeah, I tweeted out today, I said, Bayern remembered who they were in this game. They are 6-time Champions League winners and with a great history as a club.
And by the way, they won this 3 years ago with basically this team. So we're not just talking about the 1970s or the 1990s. Yep. We're talking about this team. These players won it 3 years ago.
And why do you think they added Kane? That's a big spend for a German club. They didn't add him to win the German Cup, did they? Do you know what I mean? They added him for these level of competition. So they're always focused on this. So they remembered who they were. And to your point, Tim, I said that maybe Arsenal forgot who they have been in 2024, which has been the most secure team, the team that has the best distances of any other team in the league, control the spaces really, really well, whether they be deep, whether they be high, whether they be in the mid. Yeah, and we just maybe forgot for a while on occasions. And every time we jumped away and jumped out of something and didn't quite connect, we got punished or we got made to feel uneasy. And there's no denying it. Someone can tell me they only had this amount of shots. I don't care, mate. I was watching that game and I saw the nearly moments as you did. I saw the times when we were stretched out and lucky we've got the talent we have to recover. Ben White's recovery challenge in the first half, we were on unbelievable. Where is he getting that energy from and speed from? You know, just top stuff. And Martin Odegaard's speed.
Probably because he spends... Sorry, I was just going to say on Ben White, how much of an advantage is it for us that he spent the international break on a beach in Dubai with his missus rather than playing? Because I think we underestimate that when we talk about maybe we do have to overplay Ben White yeah. a little bit. And I'm sure that the timber, buying timber, was baked into not flogging Ben White. But it's massive for us, yeah. selfishly, that he doesn't play for England.
Yeah, mate, I don't want to hear people talking about people like flipping Ezri Konsa and Trippier and all. Please don't bring them people to me. Honestly, it's just a joke. The level that he's playing at is just way up there. Only Kyle Walker lives with him defensively, and he's 33 going on 34. So that's got a short window. Tactically, physically, technically, supreme, supreme player. And so we forgot ourselves for a moment. But it's okay. We need to do this. I mean, me and you have seen these games before, and we're talking about it like it's our first time because we're excited. Right? So what do you think the players are thinking? Now, what do you think they're thinking? What do you think they're feeling? This is a huge life event for them. They have waited to get to this moment, all of their young lives and young careers. It's absolutely fine. And I took confidence. I got home and I watched the YouTube of the Arteta post-matches. And mate, he was smiling. He was smiling because he's seen enough. He's seen enough reaction. We didn't fold. We didn't disappear. We didn't crumble and doubted ourselves. We stood up and went for him again. And he was smiling. Tactically, he's got to put the right system in place. They did their thing with a 4-4-2, similar to what we do off the ball. What do we need to do? I've got this little feeling today. I want to talk to you about this. I've got this feeling that we've changed our shape this year. We've cradled it with centre-backs. We've gone to the four centre-back thing, and it's worked. Record goals, etc. It's worked. But I'm wondering if we either got to cradle with four centre-backs with a double pivot, or go traditional Arsenal. Well, I mean traditional Arsenal, I mean back to last year's Arsenal, with one side inverted, three stay back, and go that way with a high five. Or do you see what I mean? And maybe there's so many things we can do. And maybe we do, in this game, we did all of them, didn't we? So maybe it's not important what we end up starting with. It's having the ability to change in-game, face by face. But I've got a feeling for 3-2 build-up Arsenal tradition. You know, it's just how we do that, what players are shaped into that for the away leg.
Yeah, indeed, because we're talking a lot about players sharing games. You know, particularly in the wide positions, maybe even in midfield. and that's right, that enables us to go both ways. And, you know, swapping Havertz for Jesus, different thing, gave Bayern a different problem and it gets us a goal. And yeah, I think next week's going to be really, really tough. I'm going to be out there. Again, got a lot of bad memories of that stadium. I'm really hoping for a good one this time.
Tim, can I ask you a question? Because you've been there. Maybe I focused there on 3-2 and I immediately focused on us having the ball, which I think is probably an incorrect assumption. We're not going to have the ball for the first phase of this game. So maybe we do start with the Tomiyasu thing and a true double pivot and then build into the game offensively. You see what I mean? And I think because this is going to be closer to the City game than to the Brighton game, if you see what I mean. It's going to be closer to that sort of scenario. And so, hey, it's going to be fun, isn't it? It's going to be fun to us to see if we can manage the pressure of that stadium.
Yeah, definitely. And I know you and I have talked a lot during this Champions League campaign about how these games feel a bit different away from the Premier League. Oh my God, it's Man City. Every goal we concede is a disaster because of goal difference. Every point we drop is a disaster. And obviously we're in the real business end of the Champions League now, but I've come into this tie a bit more. I don't want us to get smashed.
Yeah.
You know, still could happen in the second leg, but I'm happy that we've competed with Bayern. We competed with Bayern when we're not perfect. I think it might do us a favour to slip back into a bit more of an underdog. Maybe go, actually, the game's level and it's at your place now. You're the favourites. All the talk was about how Arsenal are the favourites. I think it might serve us well to, almost like we've done in the league, where we slipped a little bit back to third and then, you know, 31 points out of 33. That might suit us a little bit more, but clearly going to be a very difficult game. But before we go, we should look ahead to Sunday against Aston Villa. I always felt in this trio of games, quartet of games, you know, Brighton, Bayern, Villa, Bayern, that Villa was the one, not I don't think we'll go Luton. You know, I don't think we'll see like Nelson or players like that. But that always felt more like a game where we perhaps rotate a bit more, just because Villa play on Thursday night and they've got a big European tie. So when I talk about rotation, Clive, I'm talking about guys like Gabriel Jesus starting. Like, that's technically rotation, but it's not rotation, is it? Like, that's not a hit. That's not Tomiyasu, I think, will start at left back. Fine. Like, who cares? That's okay. Maybe this is the one that Havertz sits, Jesus up front, and maybe we do see a Smith Rowe or a Vieira in midfield or something like that. Like, it won't be quite to the Luton degree, but I do think we'll see maybe four changes to the lineup for this one. But changes that, with the exception of that left midfield spot, I think we will see either Smith Rowe or Vieira there. The rest of the team, I think, will look pretty normal. But, you know, like with players who didn't start this game, but that no one will blink an eye about.
Yeah, I'm fine with it. I'm fine with the club knowing what's the best changes to make, knowing the team they want to pick for Bayern, because it is a Sunday. Is it Sunday, Tuesday turnaround?
It's Sunday, Wednesday.
I've got a bunch of weeks mixed up. So, So there's enough there. There's enough time to get some rest for this game on Sunday. But then we got two sharp ones. And you're right, I think Villa play Lille, I think they play on Thursday night. So they're going to have the stress of a Thursday, Sunday. So I think we can take them. But then next week, mate, I don't want to look too far ahead. Whatever happens in Bayern on Wednesday, we got, is it Wolves on Saturday night? Saturday night, you know what? Mate, if T's come to us on Saturday night, 7:30, 8:00 kickoff, we know what's going to happen, don't we? We're going to be well tanked up, ready to sing our hearts out. That's going to be a hard game, no matter what. So it's going to be interesting to see what we decide to do in Bayern, what lessons we have learned. I think the best thing about these games, Tim, is they show us our edges and they show our limits, maybe, you know, and show what games suit different people for periods and then how we adjust. And I think it's great. I think these players will be so much richer for this experience. You know, Saliba will be better. I don't think he was bad. I watched it again. He wasn't bad. Just a few small details. Gabriel, a couple of details. You know, we're talking a couple of details. I think they get the moment was a bit big for him. And not because I think that. I think his teammates thought that, which means we didn't have a player on the pitch. If you look at what he did defensively, I think he got run past once. We all know which one it was. It wasn't what he did, it's what how he looked. You see what I mean, Tim? You were there looking down on him. It's how he looked in the moment. And you have to protect that player at that particular time. You know? And Raya had a few of those moments in the first half, mate. So he wasn't alone. He was not alone. And so, but we've done it. We got through it. And we're alive, and we felt them. We felt their power. We felt their speed. We felt their weight in central defence. We've had a look at them. We've had a feeling for them. And I can't wait to see what we've learned and to see how we apply it. You know, and I think the next few days when we, you know, rewatch, I'm going to rewatch this one again. You know, if Elliot was here, you know what we'd be doing tomorrow, didn't you? You know, so because I think it's that interesting, and I almost want to make sure people can see it. You know, and but hey, look, we'll see what happens over the next few days. But I think it's going to be such a good learning experience. This club and this team will be better for that 2-2 draw. I am 100% convinced.
Yeah, it's interesting. We've spoken a fair bit on the women's side with Jonas Eidevall recently, because Arsenal played Chelsea twice in quick succession, talking with him about what happens when you play a big team twice in quick succession. He was talking about how the challenge is, obviously, you both learn things, both teams learn things. So, but he was talking about how obviously you have to go back, watch it, learn what you need to learn, but you also need to anticipate what your opponents learn.
Yeah, good shout.
And it'd be lovely to listen to the Bayern Munich Vision podcast, because if it's in English, which probably isn't, but I'd love to know what Bayern fans are saying about us. What did they come out of this game thinking and feeling about Arsenal? What are they worried about with us next week? Because you've got to factor that in as well, that they learn stuff from you and you've got to try and anticipate what their analysts are talking about, and, you know, accentuate some of those strengths and perhaps,
great point,
you know, try and surprise them. And I think that's going to be absolutely fascinating because I think maybe we learned more than they did.
Yeah.
But then again, that's probably because, to be fair, Bayern did all that learning because they've just got a longer history in the competition. But I think we can use that. We can use that and say, listen, they're going to turn up and try and do the same thing. We might not. We might try and do something a bit different. And I think that's going to be really fascinating. We'll leave it there. And obviously, we'll talk about the second leg in the coming days, as well as the Aston Villa game. Before we go, obviously want to draw your attention to the fact that, as we do every April, we are fundraising for the Arsenal Foundation for April. And we've had loads and loads. You have already raised so much money. We've had a very, very kind, incredibly generous donor who has agreed to match all donations up to £150,000. So basically that means whatever you donate is going to be doubled. If you're a patron, you have already donated because those of us on the podcast have donated a portion of our kind of income for April as well. But if you want to donate more, we're going to put the link to the Just Giving in the show notes, and raising money for the Arsenal Foundation and particularly the Zaatari refugee camp, which Elliot visited, I believe, in last year. And obviously we've got things in the back catalogue, like an interview with Leah Williamson, more kind of content around that coming out. But thank you so much to everyone who's already donated. We're about 80,000. We're coming up to the £80,000 mark.
Just over, mate. Just over.
Just
incredible.
Over.
Yeah.
Absolutely incredible. So we'll drop the link in the show notes. And thanks so much for your donations already. And I believe we'll also very soon have information about our traditional end of season live show, which is always pretty much my Christmas, frankly, my favorite day of the year. So we'll have some more information about that for you in the coming days and weeks. Until then, Clive, thanks so much as always.
Thank you very much, Tim. Really enjoyed that one, mate. And now we can calm down and read all the stuff around this game to see if we were right or wrong.
Yeah, absolutely. And we will speak to you after Arsenal 10, Aston Villa 0.